This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Great to have you with us. Thanks so much for being here. We have two very special guests today. Once again, I'm Mike Russell. There's Dr. Mike O'Neill. We have Bob Grossfeld. He is the CEO of the Media Guys. It's a Democrat, liberal, progressive-leaning, oriented media production company. We also have Constantine Carrard joining us. He's been in Arizona, Colorado politics for nearly two decades. He's been managing campaigns for candidates in state and U.S. levels as well. Welcome to you both. We have a plethora of topics. We're going to be talking money and politics, issues and parties, and we're going to be talking about people in the news, people that will be stepping up in the next generation of electoral politics.
Well, let me amplify, and thank you, Mike. Let me amplify on who these guests are and why this should be fun. For the last 4 weeks, we've done policy wonk stuff. We've talked about issues. We've talked about policies. But ultimately, all of these issues are decided by the people who get elected. But we have these elected people that we see, but almost all of the perceptions that we see of these candidates are shaped by consultants. And this week, we have two of the best with us. The old story, remember, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Well, we have a couple of the men behind the curtains today. My guess is they will agree on almost nothing in the way of issues, but I bet if we talked about the efficacy of tactics and things like that, they'd probably agree on almost everything because they're both pros. But we'll see, and it should be fun. Opening topic, money and politics. Let's start out with some facts, shall we? Arizona politics, like politics in the country as a whole, is awash in a flood of money. Where does the money come from? Do we know where it comes from? If we don't, should we be concerned? Let me start out with Constantine. Tell us what you know about the large piles of money that are out there, specifically in Arizona. Where does it come from, and to what end is it put?
I have heard of it. I would like to see it. I work out of my living room in Avondale. You see interesting stats from time to time where they'll compare the amount of money in politics, and then they'll say, we spend more than that every year on potato chips or something that probably is substantially less important to the survival of our country. There is increasing amounts of money in politics. I think Bob and I probably would both agree that the shame is you don't always know where it's coming from. I would be the subscriber to the First Amendment theory that it's your money, and if you want to use it for political speech, you should be allowed to, whoever you are, but I'd like to know who's doing it. So whatever we can do to increase disclosure, I think would be a good thing.
What do you know? We had some email correspondence ahead of time. What can you tell us about the piles that you do know about and who's behind it?
There are always these independent expenditure groups. And one of the things that has happened over the last couple of cycles since the Supreme Court ruled in Citizens United is that the outside groups oftentimes will have a louder voice in a campaign, particularly a candidate campaign, than the candidates themselves. An average person, running for the state legislature might spend $40,000 or something on the whole race, which really isn't very much money. You know, if you're trying to reach tens of thousands of people and it costs you 45 cents just to put a piece of mail out, that money can get used up pretty quick just communicating to voters. But the outside groups might spend $200,000 or $300,000 on your race. And that can create an imbalance because if you're the candidate, you'd like to tell people what you stand for, but they can't hear you because everybody else is drowning you out with their version of what you stand for. So there are a lot of IE groups. I mean, they've been around for a long time. There are association groups, industry groups, home builders, realtors, trade unions, firefighters. There'll be a lot of groups that have their own PACs, their own political action committees. And then every 2 years you see new groups created. There's a lot of groups going together right now because the big skirmish at the Capitol is over Medicaid expansion. So the side that wants it is reassuring lawmakers that don't worry, we'll have your back at election time, and they'll create a PAC and put money into it. And the side that doesn't want it says, don't do it, or we're going to come after you at election time, and they'll start PACs and put money into it. And so everybody's loading up for the next cycle.
Okay, Bob, he used a phrase, and I want to make sure that we don't lose our audience here. Citizens United was a key phrase. It plays a key role in our politics. That was a Supreme Court decision. Tell us what it is and what impact it's had on our politics.
The the core of it was to overturn law that had been in existence since the country was founded, that said corporations could not participate directly in campaigns. They had to go through, there could be limits on what they could do, how much they could spend, not just corporations, but labor unions as well as individuals. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can spend anything you want on anything you want. The only line that remained was that they couldn't give money directly to candidates. But as Constantine kind of alluded to, the new structure of things is that the candidate is, and it's almost become the orthodoxy, that the candidate is going to spend his or her money on promoting themselves positively, knowing that on the outside of that campaign, there's going to be a ton of money just trying to beat the bejeebers out of their opponent. So you've got a positive-negative structure.
Part of the issue, is it not, that it's not only there's a pile of money and it's independent of the campaign, but isn't it the case now that in a lot of these cases, they set it up so we don't know where the money came from?
Oh, absolutely. And that was part of the free speech element of the case. And so what has happened is, and we're seeing a little bit of it now with this mini scandal taking place in Washington with the 501c4s that were being looked at by the IRS. This is where it gets complicated. You can set up a number of different kinds of organizations or corporations. You can have a LLC, a corporation. Well, these are nonprofit corporations. One is called a 501c4, and they're allowed to participate in the public discussion, but they're not supposed to and can't, by law, do direct campaigns for or against a candidate. So these are the ones that have been going around going, you know, send a message to your senator telling them you don't like when they, and then it's a litany of all these bad things that they're being accused of doing. What happened was, post Citizens United, the money went into these 501c4s, and it's just been growing ever since.
And I want to stay on that for just a moment. I want you to relate that back to how that's changing Arizona politics when we come back, Bob. I'm going to give you first at bat when we come back from a break. But we're also going to talk about issues and parties. We have Bob Grossfeld. We have Constantine Carrard here with us. I'm Mike Russell. He's Dr. Mike O'Neill. This is The Think Tank. We'll be back next.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We have lifted the curtain. We're finding out the background, the policy, the real makers, the real people that make policy happen in our state and nationwide. We have Bob Grossfeld. He is the CEO of The Media Guys, a politically oriented media production company. Constantine Carrard joins us via telephone as well. He has been in the background of Arizona and Colorado politics for the last two decades. Before we broke, we were talking about 501c3s, 501c4s, and Citizens United. If you're like me, you didn't know a lot about Citizens United. You just saw a lot of people upset about it. And Bob Grossfeld gave us a very good synopsis of what Citizens United was. How does that relate to Arizona?
Well, it relates to Arizona because we are now awash in these 501c4 organizations. And the way it relates is how the money is now laundered. I don't use that term very often, but basically that's what's happening. Is you have a group or a large pot of money someplace. The Koch brothers would be a very good example, who spend money all over the place for conservative causes and against conservative, liberal, or progressive candidates. They have billions of dollars that they spend. And what they'll do is they'll funnel that money into a 501c4 that has a patriotic-sounding name, like Americans for America, or, you know, Americans for Arizona, which should be patriotic.
America, yeah.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. That was good.
Thank you.
They'll funnel the money through the 501c4 into the campaigns because the 501c4 does not have to disclose where they get the money from.
So you get money in campaigns and you don't know where it came from. I want Constantine, if you could comment on that in relationship to, I think right now the biggest money fight we're seeing going here is the battle lines are drawn in terms of the governor's Medicaid proposals. And I think there's some groups lined up with some serious money on both sides of that one.
You know, there are, but I guess I suppose Bob and I are kind of in the rhetoric business, and as a result, we're we're prone to apply it too heavily sometimes, so that whether it's the Koch brothers or George Soros on the other side, where they spend tens of millions, when the story is told, suddenly they're spending billions. No, they're not spending billions. And Arizona really isn't truly awash in money. We've got millions of registered voters, and these groups are talking about holding events that'll raise $200,000 and $300,000, which is enough to go up, and Bob knows it's enough to go up on TV and buy yourself a week or two of ads. But it's not, in and of itself, that's not going to sustain any serious campaign effort for a long period of time on a statewide basis. You're talking, again, if you want to put a piece of mail out to a million households, it'll take more than $300,000 to do that, to send one piece of mail to not even every voter's household. So I don't want the listeners to be thinking that somehow everything's just awash in money and, gosh, we don't even know how to spend it all. It's all coming in.
I think that's a very fair point. In fact, the factoid that I remember seeing about this is we actually spend more on Halloween candy than politics. So,
That's a solid investment, by the way.
But I think
makes sense.
I think perhaps – so maybe rather than hyperventilating about the amount, I think to a lot of people, the concern is when the money is spent in a way that you cannot identify the original source of the money. To a lot of people, that's troubling. Does that bother you?
Yeah, and I think in an ideal world, you could take money from whoever you wanted. You would report it as instantly as possible, given technology, and there would be that level of disclosure. In that ideal world, of course, a group that wanted to exercise its rights to free speech wouldn't then be targeted by the IRS. I know Bob called it a minor scandal, and I suppose if you're not the one being targeted, it's a minor scandal. But you have people who say, look, I want to participate in the process, but I'm literally afraid to. And as an American, that ought to trouble us a great deal, that we're afraid that if we speak out and we take a position, we'll be targeted by the IRS, by boycotts, by Bill Maher or George Soros or the Koch brothers or whoever it is that, you know, one side's boogeyman or the other side's is, you know, there are people who are literally afraid to speak out. And so they seek the anonymity that comes with saying, look, I'm going to support a group, and I know this group's going to go out and support a bunch of other groups whose mission I agree with, and I can do so anonymously. So I understand their reason for seeking the protection of anonymity, and it's a shame we've created a political environment that is so hostile to people speaking their minds. But in an ideal world, you know, you could get rid of the anonymity, you could get rid of the targeting, and you could just have full disclosure.
Which they have, by the way, in other states. Virginia is one which I suspect in the long run Arizona is moving towards, where it's you can give any amount of money to anybody for anything as long as there's immediate disclosure. That is a model that I think is being looked at much more so than it perhaps was in the past, because trying to contain the money is proving to be just absolutely impossible.
Even as a 501c4 or 501c3, you still say where the money's coming from, no matter who you are.
Yes.
In those states. Okay.
It has to be disclosed.
Quick question. Constantine raised the issue of fear. Bob, do you think that these groups have any legitimate basis for being afraid?
Well, they can be afraid if they want to. I don't think there's any legitimate basis for it. It's kind of like saying the bank robber is afraid. And how can you tell? It's because he's wearing a mask. I mean, certainly there should be no fear based on this current IRS thing, because, first of all, the facts of the case, when you drill down on it, are just silly. And nobody lost their ability to have a 501c4. And apparently some not-so-conservative groups were subjected to the same idiocy as well.
Constantine, did you have a comment on that?
That was more of a partisan response, I suspect. People who speak freely or who want to organize in groups and speak freely, I wouldn't rhetorically compare it to bank robbers. One side's out there trying to break the law. The others are trying to exercise their constitutional rights. And I think, I've been a conservative long enough and a Republican long enough that we've had our own scandals and things that we wish to go away. This is one that affects Bob's side a lot more negatively than mine. It's not minor. It's pretty darn major. And if it's 100 cases or if it's 10,000 cases, just as purists, as ideologists, as as participants in the process, it ought to terrify. I mean, it's scary stuff that it goes on. If you're a pro-life group and you apply and they go, well, first we want you to sign a letter promising you won't go protest out in front of Planned Parenthood. Well, you're a pro-life group. Why would the IRS tell you you're not allowed to exercise your First Amendment rights and go out? I mean, so it's real. It goes on. And you can see why people, you know, there's a business, the Chick-fil-A guy who came out and he took a position. It was his position. And suddenly the company's caught up in it, which works both ways. You've got lines out the door from, you know, from Christian conservatives and folks that want to support them for taking a principled stand.
I think Chick-fil-A made out in that one financially.
But sometimes folks will, you know, you'll see businesses that will suffer from boycotts and they'll back down off their positions. And that can be businesses that weren't even involved in the decision.
Well, that's the free market. That's the free market at play.
It was the Dole Fruit Company that suffered when Bob Dole was the Republican nominee for president. And there's no relation between the two.
Well, that's just, yeah, that's just America, plain and simple right there. And I'm sure we can go case by case. We can go instant by instant and play that way. But it'll take us all a year. What I think we've come to agree is that there is money in politics, and there is some money that might be ill-gotten, maybe, and we don't know where that comes from. So we're going to have to move forward on that. Coming up, I want to talk about the people, the players that this money supports, the future players. Who's coming up? Who's playing now? And what to expect? Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill. This is The Think Tank.
You're listening to The Think Tank on The Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Once again, thanks for being with us, Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill. We have a very special guest, Bob Grossfeld. He's a Democrat leading consultant. Also, we have Constantine Carrard on the phone with us. He's been on the right side of Arizona politics. Excuse me, the conservative leaning side, right, left. You follow me. The conservative side of Arizona politics and Colorado politics for the last two decades. What we want to know now, we're going to talk about. Who's up? Who's coming up? We have a gubernatorial election. We have a lot of stuff going on the state level and on the national level. Who are the players?
Okay, let me start off by talking about governor. I think Governor Brewer is a lame duck. I want to know of our two consultants here. Does anybody believe Jane Brewer's lawyer that she is allowed to run for governor again?
Jan Brewer does. That would be about it. And I'm not so sure about her.
I think you found one we can agree on. No one thinks she can run again. She's not running again.
Stop taking calls. We have a winner. Well, Bob and Constantine agree. You heard it here first.
My personal theory is she has never really believed that, but that was a little bit of a ploy to try to forestall the timing of becoming a lame duck. So, but at some point, I think that becomes forgotten. Constantine, wonder if you could handicap for us the Republican side. Who do you see is the most viable candidates for governor?
I'm semi-conflicted because I'm working with candidates in some of these races, but I will, on behalf of your listeners, just put on my, you know, my public sentiment hat. So it will be, you know, we have on the Republican side a lot of candidates for a lot of offices. The governor's race, oddly enough, could have more candidates than the Secretary of State and treasurer's race and AG's race put together. I think Doug Ducey starts out as the odds-on favorite. I think he should have a substantial financial advantage over the rest of the field. I'm working with a state senator's name is Al Melvin down in southern Arizona. Certainly one of the longer shots, but he's got he'll have a few advantages he'll try to take advantage of. Ken Bennett, who's the Secretary of State, is obviously a credible candidate. Andrew Thomas, former county attorney, is going to run. Hugh Hallman, former mayor of Tempe, is running. I'm sure I'm blanking on a couple others because I think there's six or seven.
Mayor Smith, I was going through my list as you were going. You got all of them. I'd add Mayor Smith of Mesa potentially to that list.
He could be one. There was a lady, I think her name is Christine Jones, who was with GoDaddy, who was considering the race. And now, frankly, if you've got six or seven men running for a single office and you have a chance to be a credible female candidate in that race, that's, you know, the nature of politics. I mean, there are folks that will be happy to support you. I mean, you you know, she could be a serious candidate just by getting in. So that's a, you know, who knows, if I had to bet money today, I think Ducey's institutional advantage and his financial advantage, he's the man to beat, but there are a lot of folks lining up to beat him.
Sounds like somebody could win that one with 25% of the vote, Bob.
Yeah. That's a good thing. The for those guys' benefits, the law was changed a number of years ago in the post-Mecum era. But Constantine forgot one that, frankly, a lot of those of us on the progressive side are really pulling for, and that's Andrew Thomas, the former Maricopa County
that
attorney.
In case you didn't pick it up, was a sarcastic comment.
I mentioned him. I just mentioned that he was running. That was my full comment.
Where do I contribute?
Yes. I suspect probably AndrewThomas.com or something convenient.
Okay, Bob, Democratic side. I see Fred Duvall, former aide to Governor Bruce Babbitt. There's a handful of us who've been around here long enough to remember Governor Bruce Babbitt. Chad Campbell, Senate leader. Is that it? And how would you handicap that?
I'd say right now that is it. There might be somebody else who jumps in thinking that those two will split up the vote and, you know, they'd be able to go down the middle. But I think when it's all said and done, that's the primary. And handicapping that one is very difficult because you have two people who are very well known inside of the Democratic Party. But
and probably not one person in 10 in the state could name either one of them.
There you go.
I think I would add a lot of that could be said of the Republican field as well. This is not a field that is populated by household names.
Well, I don't think there are that many household names in the state when it comes to politics. I mean, the sense I've always had in Arizona, at least, is that, you know, politics is something of a spectator sport and paying your taxes is the cover charge.
Well, let me throw a name out at you, and I'll let Constantine go first because he's coming from the Republican side. I think he's probably more of a household name than any of these candidates, though not necessarily in a good way. That's Tom Horn. Do you think Tom Horn is a viable candidate for re-election given the scandal and the controversy?
He's certainly viable. I mean, he's the incumbent attorney general, and it appears like they're going to have trouble putting some sort of a case together. But that may have to do more with the fact that the law is poorly written than that he did everything right. And you know, in his case, he needs this resolved in his favor and as quickly as possible. And the downside is every time he wins a battle, what it does is it extends it by several more months.
Yeah, and we have the unseemly situation, if I have this correct, of a court more or less saying that, yes, the law says that this type of case shall go to the attorney general to decide who shall prosecute and who should prosecute yourself in a case of campaign finance violation, which it is bizarre from most standards. What happened was, for the audience, is that the Secretary of State referred this case to the Maricopa County attorney because he said it doesn't make sense for the attorney general to decide who gets to prosecute the case involving the attorney general. And the courts came back and said, no, that's not what the law says. Bob, do you think he's still viable?
No, I think he's dead meat. This is a scandal that, if this were being played out on any other stage, would haunt him like the Jody Arias trial. It's got a lot of those same elements, but nobody was killed. It has some sexual overtones. It has an IE,
Independent Expenditure Committee. That's one of these committees that raises money from sources, sometimes not having to disclose those. That was used a couple of times. I want to make sure everybody's on board. I'm going to move on past that. In Attorney General on the Democratic side, Bob, I see Felicia Rodolini, who Tom Horn beat last time, as kind of an automatic
yes,
in terms of nomination. Is that any contest on that, Constantine?
There were rumblings about whether Terry Goddard would run. I assumed not, and I don't think she'll have any sort of a primary. I think she is a very, of all the Democrats running statewide, she probably has the best chance of winning her race. There is, and it doesn't get any coverage, which is never really a surprise. There's investigations regarding IEs that were done on her behalf. I mean, it was a $500,000 they spent for Horn, but it was $1.5 million that was spent for Rodolini. And you basically have these Democrat groups who run these ads saying they don't have to disclose anything because it wasn't a campaign ad. And of course, anybody who looks at it,
I want to real quick move on because I want to real quickly get a feedback from you on the congressional. I look at this and I say there's four Republicans who are going to have cakewalks. There's two Democrats who are going to have cakewalks. And the only three races to watch are Kristen Sinema, Ann Kirkpatrick, and Ron Barber, all Democrats who won closely. Either of you want to suggest any of those six that they think will have a serious contest for reelection?
I think Kirkpatrick will have serious opposition.
No, she's one of the three. I'm saying of the other six, is there anybody who's going to have serious rates?
No, they can take up residence in Washington permanently.
They shouldn't even have primaries. It'll be easy for them.
And I think that's coming from a normal guy's standpoint. I'm telling you, I think that's a great idea. If we can get rid of half of these primaries, I think we'd all be in great shape. Bob Grossfeld, Democrat consultant, Constantine Carrard, joining us via phone, a conservative, a political consultant as well. I'm Mike Russell. This is Dr. Mike O'Neill. When we come back, we are going to make some, so we're going to tie this up, put a nice little bow on it for you. You're listening to Think Tank, 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We want to thank our very special guests for stopping by this week. We had a great time. Constantine Carrard and Bob Grossfeld, CEO of The Media Guys. Doctor, I got to tell you, there's a lot covered here. And I think from my standpoint of someone that is a spectator of the spectator sport of politics, I heard things like Citizens United. I heard things being awash in money. I heard things about different names that I knew, Andrew Thomas, Doug Ducey. And I want to get your thoughts. And I want to start with money first. I want to start with Citizens United. We got a great definition of Citizens United by Bob Grossfeld. But I want to know from your standpoint, from your business, your wheelhouse, a public opinion of Citizens United, both sides, Republican and Democrat. What are you seeing? What is the public's opinion of Citizens United? Or do they even know what it is?
We are really, really insider politics. And this is one of the areas where it's really such a shame because people don't understand the extent to which the rules of the game matter. And as I think was Bob pointed out, there's all kinds of groups out there, American, they wrap themselves in some very positive sounding name, Americans for Americans. I don't want to.
Sure, yeah. America.
Something really good.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
Americans for all things good. And they can attract huge piles of money. And as Constantine pointed out, I don't think it's the amount doesn't really bother me because in the scheme of things, it's not that huge, but it is enough to dominate the process. But I think personally, it is corrupting of the process when huge money can come in and you don't know where it came from. Because if you knew where it came from, you could say, well, okay, this group is obviously just trying to feather its own nest and we can take their comments with that many grains, or we can evaluate those comments based upon what the interests are of the people who funded it. But if you don't know where the money came from, politics engages in discussion by code words. So we have things that are called one thing, but if you're on the inside, you know what they're really about is something else.
Because we hear Citizens United and we think, Citizens, of course, yes, we want to be united. Well, Citizens United.
Citizens United was a group that brought suit.
Okay.
And I don't even remember what they were about, but that's right. The whole point.
Sure.
It's that kind of a name. It sounds like a good thing, but that was somebody with some economic interest in something that I don't even remember what it was, and I tend to follow this kind of stuff.
Exactly, and you can find more information on MikeO'Neill.org or O'NeillResearch.com. Now, I want to go. Doesn't it help one side or the other when the citizens think when the voters feel that one side is just being supported by these evil corporate empires and they are in fact awash in money.
Well, the point is that when you have independent expenditures by the way, it's a tricky thing to make it concealed. You have the way you do that is kind of a legal shell game. The money gets all collected and it goes into this entity called Citizens for All Good Things, for example. Mm-hmm. And then there's a campaign group for particular purposes, and Citizens for All Good Things makes a donation to the XYZ operation. And somebody says, XYZ, who's behind you? And they say, who's behind me is Citizens for All Good Things. But that's just a shell.
Right.
What you really want to know is, where did the money come from? Not the shell company that was set up to transfer the money. It really is, and I think Bob was the one who used the phrase, it is a money laundering operation, so that we cannot find out where the money came from.
So now we're upset. We're upset as voters here in Arizona. And Bob mentioned that there are certain states that that demand complete disclosure.
Say, we're not really all that upset. If I say that in the abstract, people say, yeah, I'd like to know where the money comes
from.
But the fact is that we don't. And we get worked up about stuff that people spend millions of dollars on ads about. Because advertising matters. There's an old story in advertising about an ad guy was taking a taxi into New York City. Mm-hmm. And he's talking to the taxi driver and he says, what do? I do advertising. And the taxi driver says, well, I don't pay any. Nobody pays attention to advertising. And the ad guy turns to him and says, well, what kind of toothpaste do you use? He says, well, I use Gleam. Why? Well, I use it because I can't brush between meals. Parroting back exactly the advertising message of
right,
Gleam.
Sure, right.
But I don't pay attention to advertising. We are not completely manipulable, but one thing that advertising for sure can do is determine those things that we think about. You know, if we have really hard, solid beliefs, it's not, somebody spends a little more, you're not necessarily going to move it, but you can put something on the agenda, as can a newspaper, put something on the agenda that wasn't there. You just pour enough money into it, and then you remember the message. In the 1990s, when Clinton tried to pass his health care initiative, mm-hmm. It was one of the most effective, and it was widely, widely supported, and they had this I want to say Thelma and Louise, but it was a couple sitting at the table and they researched this thing perfectly and they found them, and that's my
end of the business. Remember this ad. I remember this. And Obama reused this.
And Obama changed the way he went because of had happened to mm-hmm. the Clinton thing. And they just found the message that resonated people, and that's the research, that's my end of it, to find the message that resonates with people that made them skeptical about the whole thing. And they played that, and it was the right message, and it built upon existing skepticism, and it took something that was 2-to-1 support, and it basically killed it.
But going back to the money, real quick to wrap this up, and as Arizona might join other states in some sort of a disclosure, I don't see how that wouldn't. We're a state that has a state gun.
Yep.
Okay, so if we're going to put some time and effort into something, I think this might be something that that I think the citizens get behind.
If you see that, it will only be by citizen initiative. You will not see that out of the current legislature.
And probably because those are the few that are having their hands out and collecting this.
Well, there is an inherent conflict. When you have any existing legislature, they tend to think that the system that got them elected is a pretty good system. It, after all, was smart enough to get them elected.
let's go to the races. We talked about the Republican side in names that I saw right out of the gates. Now you public opinion research, this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Which of these names on the Republican side first? We talked about Andrew Thomas. Ducey's in there as well. You brought up Tom Horn. I think everyone was laughing at that.
Well, not for governor. He was a candidate for governor,
okay.
And then he got involved in this issue that basically killed his campaign for governor. And I think he wisely decided the best I can do is to hang on to my existing job. Let me answer that question, by the way.
Okay.
And the answer is that public opinion questions on who is the most viable candidate for governor are way, way premature. In other words, somebody could do a silly little poll right now and it would show who was ahead right now, and the answers would be meaningless because most people have no idea who most of these folks are. Somebody would come out ahead. My guess is right now that would be Ken Bennett. But that would just be a measure of name recognition.
Okay. Constantine mentioned, he was talking about Ducey. He said the financial advantage.
And by the way, I agree with him.
Okay.
I agree with him that he is probably the most viable candidate. But if you did a poll right now, that only a poll right now would only measure awareness right now. I think Ken Bennett would probably come out on top, but I absolutely concur with Constantine's judgment that the most viable candidate for, because of the money and everything else, is probably Doug Ducey. In other words, the public opinion that poll that's done prematurely can measure something that's not very important.
And before we move over to the Democrat side, I want to ask you, what is more important in public polling, public opinion? What is more important, money or name?
Well, they're both important.
Which holds more weight?
With money, you buy name recognition.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I said Doug Ducey sitting on a pile of money. He's a little behind in name recognition because Secretary of State has a little more prominence than State Treasurer. He has the money. He can fix that.
And then on the Democrat side, now I heard Babbitt, someone associated with Babbitt. I heard. Who was that?
Fred Duvall was okay. A very young 22, 23-year-old senior staffer to Bruce Babbitt, who was governor when I came here in 1979.
Okay.
So he is somebody, and he then worked to a job in the State Department under the Clinton administration. He's the kind of guy who, to guys like Bob Grossfeld, are very well known. To the general public, they never heard of him because he ran for Congress once in northern Arizona, which is only 1/9 of the state of Arizona, and has not run for public office other than that. In other words, his recognition in the public's probably under 5%, and most of that's probably measurement error.
Any spoilers on the Democrat side?
No.
Dark horses?
Nah. I said Fred Duvall is a viable candidate. Chad Campbell is the Senate president. Now, that means he's been elected by a group comprising 1/30 of the state population. So Fred Duvall is probably right. That's where money, probably a little recognition, probably Chad Campbell right now. But on the financial side, probably Fred has pulled together a bigger war chest.
So. And there you have it. We're going to put another issue of the Think Tank, another episode of the Think Tank right in the books. Dr. Mike O'Neill, you can find him at MikeO'Neill.org or O'NeillResearch.com. We want to thank Bob Grossfeld, the CEO of The Media Guys. You see him at themediaguys.com. And Constantine Carrard, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Mike Russell. Thank you so much for spending time with us. We know you have a lot of options. We appreciate you spending it with us. I'm Mike Russell. This is The Think Tank.